Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Final hour, Darren Donica Chase on this Tuesday afternoon. Mitch Light from The Athletic is on the line with us. We talk a little college football with him. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good, Darren. How are you, sir?
Doing fantastic. We were talking earlier on the show. We're doing better than some of the teams.
It's a sports talk show. So
yeah, you need to do that, right?
Yeah,
makes the time go faster.
I'm not trying to tell you how to do your job, Darren.
It does make the time go faster if you talk.
You know what? It's been a while since I talked to you guys. I had to come in with a a comment right off the bat. But proceed.
I like it. Off the top rope.
Yeah.
What do you make of these lopsided games out of the gates? I mean, there hasn't been very many college football games, but what little sampling that we've got in the first 2 weeks, man, there's been some blowouts. What do you make of that?
Yeah, it's a good question. There's been a decent amount of games, but there haven't been too many FBS versus FBS games yet. And at least locally, the one involving a team, MTSU Army, and then last night in primetime, the Navy BYU game. I thought, a lot was made of on the broadcast about how Navy didn't tackle at all. They had kind of a strange camp, and I'm sure that has something to do with it. I mean, I can't imagine what it's like for your first contact to be, you haven't even scrimmaged, basically. But I thought from the first few plays that BYU just looked physically dominating. They controlled the line of scrimmage. So it might be, we try not to overreact under normal circumstances. These are not normal circumstances, but here I am overreacting. I thought BYU looked very good. Navy did not look very good, obviously. New quarterback, they've had a great run of really good quarterbacks. First start for him, so, they could still be a good team this year and more difficult to defend as the season progresses, but I was impressed with BYU. I think I was, Army has had a great run for about 7 or 8 years under Jeff Monken. 2 years ago, they kind of had a step back, but they were better last year. Just the worst nightmare for Middle Tennessee. Could not stop the option at all. Couldn't get anything going on offense. And I mean, I know it's 21-0 at that point, but the end of the half clock management fiasco was not a good look. So I don't know what there is to draw from that, Darren, because the sample size is so small. But I think we'd be naive if we're thinking it's something, if we can't just dismiss what these teams have gone through in preseason camp, the lack of consistency, the lack of continuity with practices and stuff. So, but it's, we're all excited football's back, but it's not fun to watch games like that.
Yeah, I mean, I think what jumped out to me is Navy and MTSU. They've got two coaches in place that have been there for a good while, and they have a history of playing, good schools, and they can hold their own. They've had success, and just to see both of them just get pounded like that's what really jumped out to me, because they don't have a history of that under those two coaches.
Right, and Navy, you could see to some – now, they've had more sustained success in Middle Tennessee, but Navy rarely, on occasion, they can look overmatched against some good Notre Dame teams. If they play really athletic teams that are disciplined on defensively, you'll see them slow down that option. You don't think of BYU being that. You don't think of them being a fast and athletic team, but I thought they were big and strong and physical, and they had enough speed on the outside to make them pay. But, yeah, you're right. If you're going to list a lot of the non-Power 5 coaches out there, programs out there that you kind of trusted to at least put forth a better effort in week one, I think Navy and MTSU would be on that list.
Yeah. How do you try to go about, doing what you do and trying to figure out, all those years at Athlon, you would put out, your rankings, and now you're at The Athletic. Everybody still does the same thing. You're still, right, you're trying to figure out who's going to be good. How do you go about that this season with so much uncertainty and just really not having a clue how it's truly going to play out?
you just speak with more authority and speak louder, so it sounds like you know what you're talking about and you know what's going on. But and also
a lot of bold print.
Exactly. It's extremely difficult. You know, how many times have you guys talked about what cliche do we want to use about this new normal, unique, all that stuff? It's, we just haven't seen anything like this. And then let's just talk SEC football. There's so much unknown week to week. Who's been practicing? How much continuity you have in the line of scrimmage? But then the schedule. There's no opportunity for teams to, with new quarterbacks or new coordinators. First of all, they miss spring practice. They can't ease into the schedule, gain some confidence. Like, how much does that matter? I don't know. Does opening up against an FCS opponent with your new quarterback and having him throw for 400 yards, does that help him gain confidence? Some would say yes. Some would say it doesn't matter. So I think this is just a year where we follow, we have fun, we're thankful there's some football. But if you think you really know what's going on, it's probably kidding yourself.
Magical year for LSU last year. And it was historical year, how good that team was. But they lost a lot of firepower to the next level. They've also had firepower opt out. They've been dealing with COVID cases. How do you think the follow-up to the magical season last year is going to look for LSU this year?
Yeah, I'm not as optimistic as some people are at LSU. I mean, they still have an outstanding base for talent, no doubt about it. And they've always recruited well. I think four of the last five recruiting classes have been like in the top six or something like that. But I just don't think you can go with all of the losses they sustained and not skip a beat. And I know that's not your question. We all expect them to skip a beat, but do we expect them to go from number one in the country to number six or number 10 or 12? I think they're more of a top 10 team than a top five team. It's not, you know, it's the coaching staff too, losing Joe Brady. I know he wasn't the play caller, but he was kind of the mastermind behind that offense. They just lost so much there. And it's not like if they were in the SEC East, I could see them being more of a legitimate contender. I just think that the SEC West is, there's too many good teams. There's too many top 15 teams there. Like I would slot them behind Texas A&M, maybe behind Auburn with some of the recent losses. So I think the long-term trajectory of the program, I'm still buying stock in LSU. I think they kind of turned that corner mentally. I think there's all the buy-in with Ed O when there maybe wasn't a few years ago. But I just, there with all of the losses this year on both sides of the ball, I just don't see how they're a top-five team again.
Talking to Mitch Light, who is the college football editor for The Athletic. And, Mitch, you've got some really good writers on the scene there that have covered all the twists and turns we've been seeing in the last few months. Today, Lincoln Riley came out and said he is not going to disclose the COVID information. He's going to treat it almost like injuries, competitive advantage he's citing. There seems to be something that a lot of coaches are starting to move towards. Nicole Auerbach and Stuart Mandel, a couple of your colleagues, have been outspoken against this. You have a thought on what's the right thing to do? It seems complicated no matter how you do it.
Yeah, my initial thought when I saw that tweet was, not surprising. I mean, the fact that he's just admitting it's doing it for competitive advantage, at least he's being honest. You know, you can't hide behind HIPAA laws, they're saying, because, you know, you could figure it out if you went in and they said we have five players out for COVID and there's five guys, you know, not suited up and they're not injured, and you could figure it out, I guess. So it doesn't really bother me that much. I think Oklahoma's actually been one of the schools that has been pretty transparent. They have released data. They released with them when they had to pause workouts a few months ago. So, you know, it doesn't – there's a lot of things to get worked up with what's going on in college sports, college football. That one does not bother me.
Stuart Mandel has an article right now on The Athletic, "My Hail Mary for the Big Ten, Pac-12, and a Playoff Compromise." This would be – this is something I guess we're going to watch going forward here. But as you watch what they do and you see all the reports, what is your thought right now on the chances that the Big 10 and Pac-12 eventually play somewhere down the line, whether that be around Thanksgiving time, a little bit before, a little bit after?
Well, I think they will play. I think, you know, we had a story. I work with our Washington writer, Christian Capel, and he had a story last week about the partnership with, I forgot the name of the company, but the partnership, the Pac-12, with the sort of the instant test, one of those couple of labs that can, you know, get results in 15 minutes. And Larry Scott has been, he's been very outspoken and vocal about, hey, this is a game changer. This turns the corner for us. So I think the increased availability of those tests will make it much, much more likely that both of these conferences will play. You know the coaches want to play. There's been a lot of smoke. You know, coaches have been very savvy about leaking, you know, talking to the right reporters to get information out there. What you have to pay attention to is the presidents, because they're the ones that make the decisions. But I think now there is enough smoke out there that at some point, you know, my guess, I haven't followed it as closely as Stu and Nicole Auerbach, some of our reporters that, you know, report on this all the time. My guess would be a early January start in trying those two leagues come up with some sort of format where they can play a pseudo Rose Bowl or a real Rose Bowl sometime in the early spring.
Wow. So not before that, though. Not that's around not Thanksgiving time, which is what I think everybody is trying to push for, at least from the coaches' end.
Yeah, you know, really, the more I think about it, and, you know, that makes a lot of sense, too, because a lot of schools have gone to a model where they've maybe started earlier, that they're not going to have students on campus. You know, most times you go up for Thanksgiving, you take either 3 or 4 days off or a week off, and then you come back for 3 weeks and then have finals. Well, most schools, I believe, are going to remote there. So it's easier to keep the guys healthy and all that. So, you know, that makes sense, too. And then you can, the earlier you start, obviously, the less it disrupts your 2022 season. That's a whole other thing. We don't want these coaches, these schools, they don't want to do anything that would disrupt the 2022 season very much. So obviously the earlier you start a winter or spring season, the less chance of that happening.
Chase?
Talking to Mitch Light from The Athletic here on Darren Donick and Chase. So I read through The Athletic's SEC season preview, which, you know, those are always fun to do as we get ready for an all-SEC schedule. And one thing that kind of popped out at me was the blurb on Georgia and their offense, and not true comparisons to what we saw, the resurgence of LSU and how their offense woke up last year, but that Georgia, even though everybody seems to pick them to win the East, they still need a little bit more offensively. Do you think that we see that with the Georgia Bulldogs this year?
I think there's still some unknowns. That offensive line has been, you know, they've been recruiting so well over the years. That has been such a strength. They lose two first-round picks, and then obviously Cade Mays transfers to Tennessee. What was the problem last year? It's a wide receiving corps that was young. Young and talented, those guys don't always turn out to be a year older and productive. You know, when you recruit like Georgia, you hope they will be, but there's no guarantees there. You know they're going to be good at running back. They still have, you know, they don't have much experience there, but they've got five stars, you know, after five star there. They lose some quarterback depth with Jamie Newman opting out. You know, the USC transfer, JT Daniel, has not been cleared yet. They expect him to, but that's not a done deal that he'll be clear. So I think the Georgia defense will be really, really good, but I think those are legitimate concerns. It's not just a snap your fingers and Georgia's going to be great on offense this year. I think there are some issues.
I tend to learn more from looking at the sleeper teams and those teams that people think, all right, watch out for them because they're going to shock some people, more than I do from, hey, this is our order of finish. So if you had to answer the question of the sleeper team in the SEC, which team would it be for you, Mitch?
You know, the different tiers. I like Florida a lot, but I don't think that's considered a sleeper team. I like them to win the East. I like Ole Miss. I don't know how much I like them to, you know, threaten the top of the West. You know, I don't think they're going to win the West. I really like what they have in the backfield. You know, they had trouble throwing the ball with consistency last year, but Lane Kiffin comes in, inherits, you know, is their backfield better than Florida? I mean, than Georgia or Alabama? Probably not. But, you know, John Reese Plumlee is a kid who was not a great baseball player, not really that highly recruited for football. He beats out Matt Corral. He led the SEC in rushing last year. They've got five-star running back Jarian Ealy as a sophomore this year. They're really, really deep there. I think with Lane Kiffin's creativity, they're going to score a ton of points on offense. I don't know if they'll stop enough people, but I think Ole Miss is a team that can maybe exceed some expectations.
See, Ole Miss is a team that I kind of identified as they could spoil some things that, you know, maybe not so much as a sleeper as they could win a game they're not supposed to and, you know, obviously mess some things up for some other teams. That's kind of how I viewed them, but it's interesting that you brought them up. What about Tennessee? What's your faith level in Tennessee?
Well, yeah, real quick, we only mentioned Ole Miss. If you remember the Alabama game last year, they ran all over Alabama. You know, I think they had 250 yards rushing. That's the type of thing, not saying that no one's going to be ready for them, but it's almost like playing an option team. You think you've done all you can do to practice, and then you just can't simulate it. Well, with their running backs in Plumlee back there, sometimes you just can't simulate that in practice. So I could see that's a good point, too, that they might not have a great year, but they might pull off a big upset because they'll just gash a team on the ground. Tennessee, I think I kind of fall in line with what most people think I would. You know, I don't see them threatening the big two of Florida and Georgia in the East, but I think, you know, after that, you know, could be like South Carolina. I mean, they went 4-8 last year. They've yet to identify a quarterback. Kentucky's, a lot of people are jumping on the Kentucky bandwagon because that's a program that at least we've learned they've got staying power. It wasn't a one-hit wonder 2 years ago. But I think from an overall talent standpoint, it's easy to like Tennessee at number three, but, you know, we've been over this years in the past where their roster looked like it was the third-best roster or the second-best roster, and they've underachieved. But, you know, I think they turned a little bit of a corner last year. Now, they didn't really beat anyone good down the stretch, but they won some games in previous years they might not have won. I think they need to get better, more consistent quarterback play. That's no doubt about it, but I like – obviously, there's a lot to like, Chase, with the offensive line. I think they're deep in the backfield. You know, we saw what Eric Gray did late in the year in the Vanderbilt game, and Chandler's back. So they've got good depth there. So I think Tennessee very well could finish third in the East.
Speaking of third, in this time in the West, a lot of people pick Texas A&M. And, okay, that makes sense with LSU, if LSU remains ahead of them, and then Alabama at the top. But I guess my question here is, third in the division, is that good enough for as much money as Jimbo Fisher is being paid?
It depends. You know, well, yes, it is, because they're not going to fire him. If, you know, he's got a $75 million guaranteed contract, but I understand your question. It depends, and I always say when we talk, you know, not all 8-4 teams or all 9-4 teams are created equal here. This year, I guess, 7-3 teams and 8-2 teams because they played 10 games. You have to see what they do. If they finish third, they lose to Alabama by 7 points, and they, you know, they lose to LSU or Auburn in a close game, and they win the games they're supposed to win convincingly, then sure, that's enough. If they don't look good doing it, if they, you know, they're non-competitive in their losses, yeah, then that's not good. But I think they are a team that is poised to take the next step. They've recruited very well. They've got a ton of guys back, and they've got Kellen Mond, a very good senior quarterback.
It will be very interesting. We're getting a little bit closer to seeing more and more games, and, of course, SEC play just around the corner. Mitch, appreciate the visit. Have a great rest of your week. We'll talk soon.
All right. Take care, guys. Yeah.
Mitch Light from The Athletic. We'll come back. More on the other side. Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.